lot of things I'm not accustomed to, having my picture taken, one, right? And also being surrounded by, first of all, people who've heard this before and really don't have to be here. Like my wife of almost 50 years, Jackie is back here, and members of the Bethel congregation. So a year ago this summer, with Pam Santier, our minister, the healing pastor, and her husband, sponsored a series where I brought a lot of these things into the Bethel Church. And I have to tell you, that's the most nervous I've been ever presenting these things, because they all knew me. Now, of course, if I had done this the first day, I would have been fine. But now, later on, I know some of you, and so it's going to be different. But I've always said that for any day of lecturing or things like this, if I have to go to the bathroom first, then I'm safe. And so I want you to know I have a rest area stop on the way here today. And I've always got to say something that will slightly embarrass my wife. And then I know I can walk to a good start.
And I also that spell for you, man.
I did forget to say something. I have to talk to my scriptwriter about last night, because I forgot to say punchlines and things that I should have said, like that professor thing that I was talking about. The punchline for that was, old professors never retire, they just get declassified. Okay, you're good. See, I'm testing you. Well, actually, my students became detested and degraded. I don't know if you can get defrocked, but I suppose. There's a big hurrah for that. And the other thing that I didn't say is that Jim Bodine and his poetry group asked that we leave little pieces of poetry and responses to the pieces that were in the dining hall. So there are pieces there that it would be good for you to look at. Although now the only thing that's on the table will be words, not the pieces. And when I took them away this morning, I thought, oh, this is odd. I've never done that, you know, so there have to be some firsts. If I read about my stuff, I'm not too impressed. And then when I look at it, I want to do it all over again. But another thing that really caught me this morning was in Elizabeth's Bible study, a truck came in and somebody said, the llamas are here, the llamas are here. And immediately I said, Tashe Dali, under my breath. That's the Tibetan greeting that you give for bless your soul. Tashe Dali. I thought, as in Dalai Lama. I didn't know these were packages. Good. Now we've weaved everything together. But I do have to tell you a story about a rest stop in Wisconsin when it was a big one. There were six of these porcelain units on the wall, which you women don't have to think about. And I was there, and the other five were with maroon and saffron robes. And Jackie and I've taught in Tibet three times over 40 years or so. And so immediately I said, Tashe Dalai. And Tashe Dalai, Tashe Dalai. And they all said Tashe Dalai right away. And then they looked around like, who said that? It was sort of like, in here, who's saying, bless your soul? The thing is that in all languages, but especially in Tibetan, if I say Tashe Dalai to bless your soul, and you do not respond to Tashe Dalai, neither of us gets the blessing.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
No. So, Tashe Dalai.
Tashe Dalai.
Oh, you saved my life. Well, if that I've been seeing and hearing and feeling, from the mundane to the super mundane. Super mundane is is Buddha's term for what comes after the mundane. So, you know, the mundane is always first, right? And I have provided for that now. But now the super mundane, I may have difficulty with that, which is just above the mundane. And so we try to live in the world where our feet are truly in the real world, the reality of existence. And the supra is where we project our spirit and our creativity and our responsiveness to other human beings. And so I will only comment on one thing. I was kind of brought up in my young adult life on Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And in his Life Together, he said, he made a comment about alien righteousness. And I really love that term. I'm not sure I know how to explain it. But in and of ourselves, righteousness is not part of the system. We are not there yet. So, and what it refers to is righteousness, extranos, which means from the outside. The word comes from God, from the outside, from the birth and the Christological cycle of Christ. It comes into us, and we gather in community, so that we can be given the righteousness that dwells from the outside into us. Okay, I've been looking for a way to figure out Holden Village and Astronos. Now I think I'm there, alien righteousness. I came here to be filled, and it happens every time you look around. So thank you for that. You're all part of it. I need you. And then from there on, I'm not sure what to say, because I'm here with my fugitives. We all interlope together, but I do have something that I want to treat you with, a little surprise here. It's called Endangered Species Chocolate. All natural, extreme dark. So, and this comes.
You eat this, you're going to live forever.
So I am going to, there are 15 pieces in each one of these. So make sure that they get around once before you
bubble.
Okay.
And up here.
Where do we start? Yeah, right. Okay. Well, and you can distribute.
Yeah, I can't get enough
of them. Okay. And I'm sending him from this side because I heard that the licorice got halfway and then one night. Now, if you don't do chocolate, I do have Glee gum. The whole point of living is to stay in the moment, right? Did Glee make its way out there? Oh, good. Good. You see, he knows how to do it. Here's the guy who knows. Well, I was thinking you could just take a bite, you know, but then the next person may not be so thrilled. And my scriptwriter also missed the cue on this waxed Abraham hamburger piece. I meant to pass it around saying, sink your thumbnail into it, scratch it, gouge it. Mm-hmm. You got a pen, put a mark in it. Oh. <Ooh. laughs> Well, I don't have enough teeth to make a dent. But do something to it, because then I'll take it home and I'll pass it with the mark of Holden.
Oh.
And I think I'll try to start stuff here, and you can do this section however you want to work it out. But everybody, please, when the piece comes around, all of you, please touch it. And I want to do a little special something about this piece. It's a Y-shaped crucifix. And I've done this in many different sizes. Oh, help yourself. Okay. Oh, right there. Taking students in 1974 to Rome and into the Vatican, into the Sistine Chapel, and I had been studying and teaching Michelangelo and his painting and sculpture for quite a while already, but being there is really what counts. The experience of holding eluded Jack and me for 40 years, well, not anymore, it's here, it's real. But in the upper left-hand spandrel, Michelangelo had painted a Y-shaped tree on which Haman or Haman was hanged, and behind was Esther explaining to Xerxes the problem that Haman was producing in 5th century Persia by initiating a pogrom against the Jews in diaspora. And what he was doing was crucifying them on trees. Wherever he found a place, he would tack them up and they would hang to die. So 5 centuries before Christ, this was an old way of getting rid of unwanted people. And then, of course, Haman was crucified on his own worst device. So when I saw this, I thought, okay, what am I going to do to respond to this? And the first thing that happened after we got home in that January is that we got word that one of my art students had married a St. Olaf graduate, and they were at Luther Seminary. And he was brilliant. He was in law school and at Luther Sem at the same time, and getting A's and everything. He was absolutely brilliant. And she left one day to go to church and came back, and Jay had committed seppuku, bushido honor disembowel, and then kapala. And was dead. And the family was so grief-stricken that in their grief they sort of struck him from memory, and there was, it was like everything was expunged about this young man. And I was horror-struck, but it brought the meaning of this crucifix to me in a way that I never saw coming. And I like to think my art is all something I never saw coming at me, and this was an initial piece. So I made a piece that's, I think, overall 7 feet tall. If you go to Luther Seminary, it's in the reading room of the library, dedicated to Jay Hollander. So, and I knew his roommate very well. But anyway, the idea of the Y-shaped cross meant that Christ was on the tree, Christ the conduit, reaching in through the branches to the heavens to gather in the grace of God that comes down in the rain, and nurturing all the way into the roots, into the people of God. So we are nurtured because Christ fused to that tree of knowledge and Jesse and the tree of grace. The time this was used in our family was for at the funeral of my brother-in-law. And we passed this through his many friends, and they said goodbye to Jim. Some shed tears on it, but when it got done going through the audience, it came back to my sister, Shelby, warm. Warm beyond anything you could imagine. It was heated up. So we have also used it for weddings. We got to get to the upside of this too, so that when it arrived for the bride and groom, it was warmed by the blessings of everybody present. Pass that around, and you can then say a prayer for somebody who needs your prayer. All right. Well, I want to get on to Moses, because some of you then, we get past Abraham, but Moses, who was really probably wouldn't obey orders if you let's see, harnessed him up. Yeah, how about that? Well, and so I need to start with this piece, and a lot of you have looked at it and you've had the explanation, but I'd like to just kind of go over it because, as I understand, Moses was tongue-tied. Well, he didn't know, what do you want me to do? You know, 4 years? Are you kidding? I want the comfort of my air conditioning. So anyway, I stuck his tongue into the keyboard and his eyeball into the computer screen, and I call this Moses and the Apple 2C. John here told. And then got a pair of a set of rabbit ears on the top of it. It's then a TV. And then Coley, Michelangelo carved the Moses with these bumps on his head. It's kind of the prophetic wand sticking out. And then on the screen is the crucifixion of Christ. So it takes it maybe a little farther than Moses had in mind. You know. So far, so good. And careful, it's really heavy, and there are some sharp things underneath. I should have filed them at home in the car. Ooh, okay, so I picked this one up already. And this is Moses in a mushroom cloud. And I've got the mold material here to use. Once I make this in clay, I put the rubber mold around it, then I pour wax in, hollow wax, and then take this mold off and put it's called a ceramic shell, about a quarter inch thick of ceramic slurry, and that dries, and then you melt out the wax, pour the bronze in, chop off the shell, buff it down, and polish it, and it's ready for you to handle. Now, I didn't bring the bronze version of this because it's really like a grenade. It truly is. It's like an explosive device. But I had the wax in here and it all fell apart. But standing on a mushroom cloud, and the whole idea is that, Jackie and I have climbed Mount Moses a couple times with students, and it was really one of the dumber things we did the first time. Totally insane the second time, because it's in the dark. You start at 2:30 in the morning, and you're up these steps, and you can't see a thing, and your flashlight goes dead. Students all hate you. And you get to the top, and the sunrise comes up, and bam, you really feel like if anything's going to happen between Moses and God, this is the spot. And you look around for the tablets, and all you find are 150 Japanese tourists.
Japanese tourists.
But then the trip down Mount St. Catherine's Monastery is yet another of those uplifting experiences. And you get to the bottom, and there's, they say, a descendant of the burning bush. But it's still there, because it burned, but it did not burn. And so you all kick off your shoes, right? And get the dust on your feet, and then think about what that meant. Well, Moses is in the mushroom cloud, but he's not destroyed. Okay? And the whole idea is that this is a, and there, by the way, is a bigger version of this. At St. Olaf in the Buntrock Commons, if you ever get there, you can spin it around. I like spinning things. Yeah, and it's a lot more clear of what's going on. But this I call a Xerox of the tablets because I couldn't get a hold of the original. And it had faxed to me, right? But on it is written the nuclear law, or the new clear law, to love your neighbor as yourself or kiss your neighbor goodbye. And so I made up a fictitious website called godshoutatpeople.law.love. The last thing is make sure there's love. But someone might help me set up that website. I'd like to see what goes on. Could be something interesting. But when you use this rubber mold, every thumbprint, everything,
shows up.
And that's why I leave the surface rough so often, because I want that energy that goes into making the piece to still be there, kind of emanating back at you. And so when you touch it, you aren't touching me, so don't worry about that part. Although hugs are welcome, you know. But it really means that I intend the energy and the idea that I put into it is somewhere in aura between us.
Oh, right.
Well, boy, we're moving right along. I like in our time, I'll stand over here for a while, bother you. Jack and I did not see any of this coming, but when we arrived at St. Olaf in 1970, everybody was talking, well, of course, first of all, about Holden. And we just knew someday we were going to have to come here. But we thought maybe in a year or so we would get here. Well, St. Olaf had another idea. I taught in the visual culture of India, China, Japan, and Africa, and then world architecture. And they recognized, they must have recognized that I knew nothing, basically. I've had all of the graduate cycles and all, but my appearance in the classroom must have been unimpressive, because they said, Mac, you got to go there and authenticate your existence, otherwise, you know, there's no point in this. And it turned out that way. You know, I could come back with all these slides. I took something like 25,000 slides in the course of time. And then I would show them, and I had been there, and they would say, oh, good. How many? But that didn't prevent them from sending us away again. But then there were always students who'd been to places I had not been. Like one in my very first art history class, one of the women there had just come back from Angkor Wat in Cambodia. It was open briefly and then shut down again. And from that point on, I just dreamed of getting to Angkor Wat, the huge, it was a Buddhist Hindu monument in the jungle. And we didn't get there until, I don't know, just a few years ago. And so there are things that you ought to do before you die, and Holden was on that list. So what does that mean?
Keep eating the chocolate.
Yeah, right. Back to the jungle, man. But in the meantime, we did go to India with students on a number of occasions. And I even had a sabbatical there, which was just mind-blowing. But with students, we visited Mother Teresa, both in Mumbai and Calcutta. And in Mumbai, I'll just tell you one experience. The students were asked to go to, to go to an orphanage, and we had some funds that we were going to spend to help this orphanage out. We had to find out what they needed, and it's not handing out money. So the students went and bought sheets and pillows and towels and things. And they lined up and gave them to the young children in the orphanage. And they literally did not know what these pieces of cloth were for. They'd never had them. They didn't know what a sheet, a blanket, or anything. They just simply didn't have it. So there were a lot of tears shed between these young people and our students who started the tears. And so in the very next day, they took us to the hospital for rejected babies. Mm-hmm. And in this huge room, the size of this whole floor, there were 200 cribs with babies. And, many of them, they had skin over their whole face and just little pinholes to breathe. And distorted, deformed, it was just hideous. We could barely stand to be in there. And there were 30 of us all together. And we stood there and asked the nuns, what are we supposed to do? They said, go pick up a child. And you stay with that child until it responds to you. Cool. What an assignment. I don't think we would have even thought to pick up a child that was that deformed had they not instructed us. Hands off. So we did that. And everybody had gotten a response. Grunt or a smile or a giggle, except Lars Sonander, who 2 years ago, he and his wife ran the Ironman in Hawaii, and the next day got married on the beach, and Lars was a hunk, just didn't respond.
just about to leave, and he got a response. We're all on the floor, bawling our heads off. Look at me. I'm a wimp. I can't manage it, you know? And that group was so tight from then on. There was, you couldn't slip a sheet of paper between them in terms of their emotional bond and their spiritual bond. So there are ways that. And then, oh boy, have they been all over the world doing things since then? Wow. Two of them in that group set up a fund called Beyond Global. And they are raising $3,000 for each of three groups, semester programs, Middle East, from Asia, and Global, to send with these groups to pay back for all they said we have taken from the culture that we visited. How do you ever manage to do that for a young person? Well, I don't know. You do it at Poland. So. Now, this is called Mother Teresa squeezing life into a child. But Mother Teresa isn't on there, it's just squeezing. And it's either burying the child or the child is born and resuscitated. And we saw these nuns in white, in light blue habits on bicycles with baskets going around the streets and picking up bags of bones and then going back to the hospital to either give them a dignified death or to dispose of them appropriately. And all of this made just a tremendous impact on, of course, us, on Jackie and me, and also students. So, but that's ongoing. That is in perpetuity now. The students who go on these programs now contribute.
And well, Matt,
hey, hi.
One thing.
Go for it.
Our brother-in-law, Jim, that he was talking about earlier, was head of personnel for Robbinsdale School District, a very beloved teacher. And so when he died, Matt did a large piece of that that's in the chapel at Augsburg College.
Oh, yeah.
You come in the door of his mother, Teresa's losing life.
Well, thank God. If you ever go into the Augsburg Chapel, rub it. Remember Matt Thornia. You can't hurt it. And also, Don, you can be in charge of that. Or somebody. Thank you. And over the course of some, I guess, 40 years, maybe I made 2,000 pieces of sculpture. But I should say that crucifix, the Y-shaped one, that was cast in an addition of 1,000. So I'm counting that. it took a whole year, and whoa. And then it was for the college, and they gave it to people who came in who were visiting and all. And then, of course, part I wasn't so sure about is they gave it to folks who included St. Olaf in their will. So these people keep popping up saying, oh, I've got one of those, and then another one said, oh, I've got two of them. Because, you know, somebody died, and they had them. So, anyway.
And sometimes people buy them in goodwill in Phoenix. And they go online and buy back.
Yeah.
And then they contact.
I get an email saying, "Tell me about this piece."
I paid $50 for it. What's it really worth?
Well, how about I've got a cousin in Belgium, and she got it on eBay for $325. Well, it cost $50 to cast that, so I almost didn't dare tell her she paid too much. So you never know when pieces will like show up again or come back to haunt you. But I like that. And the idea of the bronze, of course, it takes 2,000 degrees to heat a crucible of bronze. And we've got a beautiful foundry at St. Olaf. And visit that too if you can. But from the first time I did it in graduate school, I realized that I was looking into the mouth of a potential afterlife for myself. So I wanted to get used to it before I had to face it. So far, so good. But anyway, but I like the sweat, and you have to lift that out with the
tongs, and then you put it into a pouring tank, and you pour it into these molds that are buried in the sand, and then you lift them, you pull them out, and they're hot, and you throw them out in the snow, and it sizzles, and oh, there's just so much action, wild action. And I have the limit of 20 students in there, and every once in a while, parents would stop by to see what was happening, because their kids would be talking about this, woo. Because once you get into it, you know, you just have to follow it through. And this one father said, I have never seen my son Eric move that fast in his life. Somebody had spilled, you know, he was sweeping. So there's something to be learned even from the process as you do it. And is it okay if I just keep plunging?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay, good.
Well, and this piece is called Roots and Wings. And there is a larger version of this that also, well, I think it was in Bethel Church for a while, but got knocked over and one of the wings got knocked off. It's not flying very well anymore. But it was done for the Nobel Peace Prize Forum that comes to St. Olaf every 5 years. It started in 1989 and then 94, and then it had to skip a year while we were under construction, and then 2000, 2004, and then 2009, which is this one. But this was in 2000. They called Roots and Wings, and it was done to honor the Nobel laureate of Jimmy Carter, who came to campus and then to get the bigger piece of this. But this is the one that we passed through the audience. And I'll just say that there are babies being born, going down the umbilicus mundi, the source of human life, is on this side. You turn it around, and it's the axis mundi being built, or the center of the universe, which for children is family and school and community and church. And they're moving up, and on the larger piece, they start upside down, and as they move up, they're helping each other. They're learning community. And then, let's see, you move to another side, and there is the loving couple coming together, and it's almost like a deposition from the cross. Now, I can't build religion specifically into these Nobel pieces because it's not supposed to be based on that, but I still sneak them in where I can. Then there's a mother, I call the babies fugitives, because once you're out of the womb, you don't have a chance. There's no going back, which is, you know, that seems like an option. It's no longer that way. And then once we leave the nest, we are refugees. We can go back, but we're not totally belonging at our axis mundi after we once leave it. And so there is a mother cradling her child, then there's a hand of nurturing of the father coming around to assist with that, and then there's a puto on this guy's leg. And a puto is, in the mythological sense, and especially in the Renaissance, is a baby that dies before it has a chance to be baptized, so it goes right to heaven. But heaven got a little overloaded with these mischievous little kids, so now we have the, what is the baby of love? Okay, good. I just have to test what, see if I'm the only one that's falling asleep. The Cupid is here saying, make love, not war, and he's at the man's leg, right? Okay. And then the last one is, since it was for Jimmy Carter, I did an image of him, which I don't think he could be too pleased about, but standing on Habitat for Humanity, a little house down there. Mm-hmm. And this person is actually my description of Bahubali Gobaneshwar at Sri Vandana Gola in Karnataka, South India. Now, you do not have to memorize that. Okay? But, of all my 40 years of teaching this stuff, there are a few things that stick, and this is one of them. Bahubali was an evil emperor in the south of India who slew 150,000 people, wounded another 100,000, and the teachings of Mahavira, a Tathagata of Jainism, of nonviolence, ahimsa, came to him in the, this would be in the 6th century CE, but Mahavira was the 5th century the other direction, almost, well, contemporary Buddha. Anyway, he repented and decided to stand in the jungle for 99 years to be penance. So the jungle grew up around him. And there's a 60-foot high granite statue of him in South India that we keep taking whenever we get to go to India. We go to this pilgrimage site, and the concept is that, of course, none of us can stand there that long, but Gandhi then took Ahimsagraha, nonviolent resistance, and got India back into its own sovereignty. So it is contemporary in that sense, and we should resist peacefully when we can. And standing on his shoulders is the female Pegasus, or Pegasa. Pegasus was the horse that took Perseus around to dispense with evil. His sword was powerful against evil. And so they would, the winged horse, wherever they flew, and wham wham, and things were separated in the way they went. But Pegasus had a cloven hoof. Only cows have, or other types have cloven hooves. So wherever Pegasus, poof, tap down. Do that, okay? See, this is great how pliable and gullible we are. I don't know, it's like students, you know, you tell them to do this, and then they go home and they tell their parents, you won't believe the stupid stuff they did. But, you know, unless you actually feel that on your foot, it's hard to know. Well, wherever the cloven hoof touched the ground, a spring would bubble up, and the water would nourish a plant that yielded a flower, the aroma of which nullified the venom of snakes. It's all myth. But in the process of making peace, we can be the cloven hoof. And maybe that's all the farther we get in that process. We may not be at the stake, but we need to be safe. So this one is a little bigger. Now the idea with all of these is that it is bigger. The only way you can pass it really is not like I'm trying to put it with one hand, but two people pass it. And then it is possible, like passing the peace. Oh, you're ready. No, yeah, see what happened? Almost threw our chair. And that's the idea of the bronze. That's what I love about the bronze, is that whew, it's something really substantial. When you get done with it, I'm not very good at holding it when it's hot. Okay, we're getting there. Now, this piece is called Bearing the Burden of Peace, and there are two sides to it. And on one side, a woman is holding her stomach, I should say this was designed in, when they were living in Jerusalem on the Torah in the Middle East in 1998 and 99 with students. And so I thought of a nativity right away, Holy Family, but it can't be quite that, but to you, make it whatever. But anyway, I thought of Mary with this burden that she was bearing. And on her head is a baby. She's thinking, oh, out of me, this is it. Like, get this bowling ball out of my stomach. And those of you who have babies, and those guys can't get along with this at all, there is a point where you say, I want this out. So here we are. And it's cast, and this is the head and the baby in wax. So this was the size that was cast for the Peace Prize for him, and then it was given to John Hume and David Trimble of Ireland, who made Ireland safe for children. So anyway, on the other side is the father presenting the child to the world for care and community and love and destructive form is out there. And you remember, most of you, that Irish children were sent to the USA in the summer so they could be away from terror and pain. Well, that truly prompted me to go in this direction. Now, a quick story about this. I was at a World Missions Conference, the ELCA, in Bozeman, where I saw the facility. And by the way, there's a story going on all over the place here. Neil invited me to come to his church in Minot, where I was born, because I had a small exhibit at the college, and even spoke during the service. I mean, you really are a Betsy pastor. Can you imagine? But it was.
Campus pastors can get away with a lot of
that. Well, you know, that's true. That's true. Yeah. You are there for that reason. Well, you know, maybe you didn't even hear the story. I went, everything was being shipped by truck. Tom Witt, who will be here next week, trucked it all out there and then trucked it to him. Yeah, I'm going to be arrested for abuse. Anyway, but this piece I needed because I was flying home Sunday, and the next day I was starting a seminar for the St. Olaf Summer of Theology and Music program. So I had it in my backpack, and TSA stopped me like, bingo, whammo, yes. And I said, and they pulled it out, and I said, well, so I decided to go the nativity route, and I said, well, it's the Mother Mary was having a baby. And this guy thought, well, some kind of so he called a supervisor, and while the supervisor was coming, I thought, I've got to come up with something other than this religious fanatic thing.
Because
so
he told you to go down the basement.
Yeah, and ship it home, yeah, and not take it on. And the supervisor came and said, what is that? And I said, it's a bowling trophy. Mark Hansen. He had done the sermon that morning, which I missed to catch my airplane. And so I told him this story, and he was cracking up. Usually he doesn't want to talk to anybody when he's working on his next project. And then, so this appeared in the Lutheran magazine. He wrote an article about forgiveness, and he was much more articulate than I was.
There it goes.
All right, well, we're getting to the point where we might be able to relax. well, now, every 5 years, of course, the college now expects me to come up with this. And like I say, it's for the Nobel Peace Prize for them. That's Norwegian. And you know, the Swedish Nobel is for literature and sciences and all that. And that's Gustavus Adolphus, where Jackie graduated. And so the Norwegian Nobel is at St. Olaf, because you know the two countries were together in the late 19th century, and so Alfred Nobel said, well, we'll throw a bone to the stork bone and have the Peace Prize, you know, and the important stuff will stay in Sweden. Well, then the country split, and the stork bone wouldn't give the Peace Prize back. Stubborn Norwegians, you know. And so anyway, every 5 years, it comes to St. Olaf, starting in 89, and it goes around to the five Norwegian-based or originated colleges in the area, Concordia, Augsburg, Luther, Augustana, Sioux Falls, and St. Olaf. So at the first one, they wanted something, and they did something, and then each of the major participants, and Norman Borlaug was there, and the UN peacekeeping operations were there for their Nobel from earlier. And so I had to make a little one and a big one. And so and that's been happening every 5 years. And like I said, in order to do this Nobel Peace Prize Forum, I sweat bullets for 5 years. And someone said, Matt, you got to come up with a better metaphor. Oh, yeah. But it is, it's just terribly slippery, dangerous turf for me. So I try to get it all filled in. Well, actually, I should recite the poetry for Burying a Burden of Peace tonight.
Yeah.
That, before I get on to this one. Because as I have said pretty much all along in my career, if I make these things with my hands, the sculpture can't speak on its own. It's what it is. And you draw out of it what you put together. But I, all along, been thinking of poetry and other ways of writing. But the essay doesn't do it for me. Did everybody get chocolate? I think you did. It's all gone. Huh? Is it?
There's two more here.
Oh, keep passing it. Man, really?
I'm just saving it.
We want three.
Matt, I'm going for three.
Oh, okay, good. Well, there's ecstasy at the end of that. So anyway, I want to give the sculpture a voice. I want it to speak if I can do that. So I write the poetry and over and over and over again. And then I swim 5 mornings a week with Jackie and 20 or so other old ladies. And they, no. Well, see, the whole idea of being artist is living on the edge. But I'm in the deep end of the pool by myself, and I'm reciting this poetry and making up new verses down there. And I don't know if you knew that, Bonnie. But I'm not, I'm trying to make use of that time, but it's perfect because, the rhythm and the movement, I'm embraced by this warm water, I have all these lovely ladies.
Nice try, man.
Well, they're on the
deep end.
Yeah. It's deep blue and some. But, I got caught calling it the Q-tip Club. There are all these white heads bobbing around. Yeah, if you can't laugh, you get plunged underwater. So I'll just go through it. There are 4 verses to it. If peace is a form of ultimate human understanding, before I pass into the heart of God's surrounding, I want to plunge my head into the seas of language and drink from every tongue only the words of kindness. Then, with the taste of love in my mouth, I want to whisper silence on wars of shouting at children of abuse, on races from hatred, between embittered genders, within unholy religion, by angered nations. If peace is death, as in rest in peace, before I lie down underground to cease, I want to swaddle myself in unfamiliar clothing and nestle into the smell of fresh dug earth next to the stones and bones of forgotten people. And I want to run my fingers through the silt of their sorrows to quench their mourning thirst for those innocents who were shed on never again fields for letting blood. If peace is kindled in children, our progeny, before I garland my soul with bouquets of eternity, I want to spill my seeds of final begetting into the roots of the mercy tree, from which hangs the last unchristly corpse of the human heart. And for the yet unborn, I want to feel their blood flowing through my flanks that will soak tomorrow in the deep red ages past of all our origins. If peace is a form of tradition passing, before I give up
my most prized possessions of hair and teeth, of flesh and breath, before I let go of hordes of family and hugs of friends. I want to squeeze my soul through the martyr's throat to feel words of compassion as spoken by the lips of mercy. If I love my neighbor as myself, there may be peace on earth. Then I want to flood the world with the sweet sounds of bearing the burdens of peace, using your impressions, not just my own, of how six of these casts. This is the remaining one. Five of them were given to the participants in the Peace Prize Forum last March. And I'm going to pass this picture around because I first made this piece in wood and metal to get my ideas figured out. And then 2 feet and then 4 feet. And for the forum, I built it 14 feet high. This fit in our living room, which is an old church with a 16-foot ceiling. But I started on January 9th when Jackie had her knee replaced and was in the hospital for a while. I was not able until March 9th to really get into the living room to see what I was doing. So anyway, I escaped. But it's fine. She knows what I'm up to. Because I made a lot of racket, didn't I, honey? And then wheeled it in to the area so that the big one would spin in different directions, and then recited the poetry. But I will say that while we're here, this bird on top, one direction is taking off, and the other direction, the other direction is landing. So it's a double piece coming and going. And when it spins, then it sort of like this, taking off and landing all at once. And this is the DNA molecule. Put that in as I started reading about science and what was going on and climate change, because it was to honor Al Gore and the International Panel on Climate Change, who came to say, Al Gore didn't, he blew us off. So. Sorry about that. and I shouldn't say blew us off. He was extremely busy. But everybody said that he did that, so he didn't get one of these. That's why I got them.
That's our voice right there?
Yeah, let's say that. Yeah. Don't get it out. But it's also the caduceus in there. And so I started to study the DNA molecule, and it's the terminology is really thick. But it's laid out from Crick and Watson. A woman actually was the one who figured this out in 1950. And then those two guys took credit. Came up with a workable model. But there were colors in there, and so I put the colors on the base. You can't see them from where you are. But they're colors of the DNA molecule in black and white, and these also represent the ethnic divisions around the world. And the idea is that if you spin this fast enough, they blur into one color. So they're all basically, right. Yeah. Now, I'm going to turn more slowly here. First of all, you can't see on the inside the fluke of a whale, and so that's for life underground, under the sea. Then there's a hoof, and that's the hoof of a horse that, not cloven, but was designed through the 19th century basically for the transportation and plowing. And then there's a talon of a raptor for the birds of the air, life in the air, essentially, and then there are two footprints. I call them male and female, but they don't distinguish from each other. And these are the human footprints that are the largest of all prints on the planet. And this is not evident in the wooden piece, but you know, when you got the bronze, you get to draw lots more things. And then from one side, there is this arc of, I call it L'Arc de Triomphe. That's this piece right here. And what I was trying to do is think about the conflicts that are existent in the 21st century that we didn't feel as strongly before. Starting below level at Abraham, there was a split between Judaism and Islam. Islam bubbled up to the surface in the 21st century as in conflict with Judeo-Christian Western values and politically, but also spiritually taking on a new form. And the idea is that in the 21st century, we will wobble, we will wobble, we will wobble somewhere up here. There will be the kiss of peace. This is our major conflict to work with. Oh, good. Is that the sign? Is that for whom? No. What I was trying to do is create something that was designed also to go in front of the new science building at Seattle, but not to threaten the science people with any of my work, because this is kind of outlandish. This is the wildest thing I've ever done. I didn't want to get them unnerved. But the 14-foot model, you know, was half the size of what it would be if it went out in the public, which would have been kind of a big dream. But I like the idea of controversy. Wow, wouldn't that be fun? So far, not going to happen. But anyway, these pieces that come up here are solar flares. I saw them on the internet. And they were like live. You could see them wiggle. And these are exactly like those solar flares, thousands of miles off the sun. And we didn't know that, you know, until Galileo fiddled with the telescope, looked through and got blind and went into exile for his views. And there's just so much you can build into something like this. But the idea with the one with color is that every color has a neighbor who becomes a friend, and every form or shape has an opposite who becomes a lover. That's big in here. So the idea is, somehow I have color on. Okay, I'm going to recite the poetry. But this would be like a Qibla, or a mihrab and a Qibla wall of a mosque facing Mecca outside of the science hall. On this other side, you see a crucifix. Mm-hmm. With the feet on the ground, the crucifixion is over. But the arms, the one arm is going all out over the murderer, the non-repairable sin, and non-replaceable. And underneath is the head of those oil rigs. Non-replaceable. Okay. The other side, the thief who sought salvation, now the arm turns into wings, a phoenix with the talon, rises up out of the ashes, flies into salvation. So the idea is that Jami Masjid on Friday, the Muslims, then we have a mosque on campus in the basement of Carson Hall. They pray here, the Christians pray here within earshot, not gunshot. So it's an artistry. Okay, you got the poetry. It doesn't take long, so I'll give it a run. God of beauty and life and creative laughter, of dancing arms and dazzling color fragments, twirl us on the heights of dreaming that our future is still ahead to hold. God of sprightly winds and vastly skies, from melting polar scapes to the drifting sands of time. Reach across the endless shores of global warming, then stretch us into common earthly caring. God of truth, in every breath and heartbeat, molder of our righteous deeds, pour us into shields of justice to triumph over all who would be holier than thou!
and churning up, pound human malice into submission, then nudge our good intentions to completion. Cloud of God and seamless gathering of sky, spin the bulging wheel of centering that will push us to the very edge of our horizons, then hurl us to our farthest measure. God of dwelling in the loveliest and the lonely, where beauty's palette meets its master of disguise, fill our lens with images of mercy too precious to explain. God of coursing through our veins of darkness, stream compassion through our lips and fingers to weave our words and deeds of kindness into simple human terms. We share our feast of peace today with all humanity, where we are ready to devour one another in quiet curiosity to find what Jesus knows is a heart of love.
Carry things back?
Well, I suppose they could go back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Oh, that's great.